In his essay, Flights of the Imagination, Journeys of the Heart, McNally's Idea of Theater, Raymond Jean Fontaine takes us to a scene from one of Terence McNally's plays, writing, "As a children's theater director, Lou Nunkel excitedly explores a long shuttered theater building, and he imagines how he would restore and use the space. I would transform this shabby, forgotten, forlorn room into a place of wonder and imagination again. That chandelier would sparkle anew if I had to polish every crystal myself. The aisles would be newly carpeted in a gesture of welcome and respect. Those rows of broken seats would be reclaimed in a plush red velvet that said, 'Sit down, children. You are safe here. We are going to take you on a wonderful journey to China or Persia or Timbuktu.'" Lines from the play, Dedication, or The Stuff of Dreams. A theater should be a place of wonder and imagination, its furniture and appointments as rich and splendid as the emotional journey on which a play takes the human spirit. But more than a physical sight, theater is a stimulus to the sympathetic imagination, that is, the opportunity for an audience member to participate in the life of another person and make that physical and emotional connection without which, as the character Johnny cautions in Frankie and Johnny in The Clair de Lune, without which we die. And always, the curtain will fall, the story will have ended, and we actors go home now. But something has changed. Tinker Bell has lived. Cinderella has found her prince. You, the audience, will go back to your real world, and it will still be raw and painful, ugly even, but maybe a little less so because of what you have seen here today. Harmony and happiness were possible. And I, the actor, will go back to my real world, and it, too, will be a little bit more bearable, a little less unbearable, because of what I have given you, and in giving you, have given myself, laughter and love. Lines from the play Dedication, where we're reminded that theater allows audience members to participate in flights of the imagination, journeys of the heart. But these flights and journeys must always return their participants to the real world, in which the engaged audience member can now live with a greater appreciation of what it means to be human. Theater's not a place to hide from the world, but instead the very place where we may finally discover our true selves, McNally writes in his preface to A Man of No Importance. The stimulation offered by a play should be such that audience members feel that they will burst if they do not verbalize their excitement during the course of the performance. But that ability to respond also suggests the extent to which the quality of one's life outside the theater will be enhanced by one's willingness to engage with what one witnesses on stage. The author of some 28 full-length plays, 22 short or one-act plays, 10 books for musicals, 5 opera libretti, and 11 film scripts or teleplays, not to mention a dozen or more skits written for benefit performances, Terence McNally has taken countless audiences on flights of the imagination and journeys of the heart. For more than 50 years, he explored theater's ability to forge those emotional, physical, spiritual, and intellectual connections without which we die. The individual by cowering in fear behind the walls or screens or whatever they are, partitions that insecure individuals defensively erect. And society by sinking into the blind, suffocating anxiety imaged by the terrifying darkness that overcomes the character Ruby and her brood at the close of McNally's first professionally produced play, and things that go bump in the night. Significantly, in Dedication, the character Lou concludes that the stimulation afforded by an excellent production of an engaging play can leave audience members breathless with excitement. Yet McNally recognizes the more powerful the performance, the more devastating the close of the final curtain. As Shakespeare's Prospero understands only too well, the revels must end, or there would be no opportunity for the audience, after leaving the theater, to grasp the extent to which their everyday lives have been altered by the experience of the play. That from an essay by Raymond Jean Fontaine. Diva Theater in Scranton believes in the power of theater and is committed to presenting works with that kind of heft. And the current season continues with a play by Terrence McNally titled Mothers and Sons that opens this Friday at the Old Brick in Scranton. Director David Hunnish and actor Seth Godin paid a visit to the WVIA Benko studio to talk with us about the play and why they each choose to work at Diva. David.
I've known Paige and Bob Belitsky for a while, even when they had Diva in other locations. But I think one of the things that makes Diva very special to me is that Paige and Bob really create a family atmosphere there. The actors and directors and artists who go there are treated with a lot of respect and are treated like family.
They are great supporters of original pieces, making sure that regional voices are heard or plays that might not get produced get produced. Would you say this is an example of a play that would be the kind of thing that Diva Theater wants to get on?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Nobody else would take as much time and effort to look at some of these different plays. You know, last year I brought them to do a stage reading of Extremities, and now we brought them Mothers and Sons. There were other theaters who they wanted to distance themselves. They were afraid of alienating their audiences. Diva has never been like that. And I have to say that that is very refreshing, and that's what keeps me going and doing theater in this area.
Did you then say, Seth, here's a play that we should consider, and is there a play reading committee? How does it work?
On our board, we take submissions, whether they're from board members or from outside people. Mothers and Sons is actually a play that I read a number of years ago, and it was one of those things that kind of stays in the back of your mind, and I found it very powerful. And I had actually introduced Seth to it, who felt the same way about it. And on the board, we were actually looking for a play to do for Pride Month in June, and we both felt that that would be a good fit, and the other board members read it and felt the same way.
And Terrence McNally is an award-winning playwright, a distinguished American playwright, and he had a little play right before this one, Andre's Mother, that might have been on TV, that was maybe the germ of this play. Is that what happened, Seth?
Yes, absolutely. Back in the early 90s, he wrote a 10-minute play called Andre's Mother, and that takes place outside in New York City, like by a duck pond. And Cal, who's introduced into Mothers and Sons 20 years later, his partner Andre, who they talk about in Mothers and Sons, just died. And they're at a memorial service for Andre. In that play, you have Cal, you have Cal's sister, you have Cal's father, and then you have Catherine.
She's Andre's mother.
Now, in this 10-minute play that sets up a little bit of Mothers and Sons, Catherine never speaks. You only ever hear Cal and then his family.
Mothers and Sons had its premiere at the Bucks County Playhouse with Tyne Daly as Catherine. So in a play like this, you need good, strong actors.
I mean, we lucked out with a wonderful cast. I'll mention two of them. Hashi Walker, who's playing Catherine, and Brad Vile, who is playing Cal, and I play Cal's husband, Will. So just a dream, and they're wonderful to work with.
it would seem that the space of Diva Theater might lend itself to the story here, which is an intimate family or relationship drama. Is that right?
Right, and that's one of the things at Diva that we always try to keep in mind when we're choosing a play, too. We've got a small intimate space, so we often try to look for plays that have smaller casts, one set, which this play does. And I think the smaller setting of Diva's theater brings the audience very close to these characters and makes it an intimate experience for both the actors and the audience.
So we are in New York City in an apartment, and Catherine is visiting a family, right? And it happens to be her son's
partner.
Well, of course they would have been partners. Same-sex marriage wasn't approved in New York till much later, as we know. It was the 1990s when Andre died, was it?
1994, March 29th, 1994.
So times have changed since the 1990s, yeah. Right?
20 years.
So that must be part of the exploration.
Yeah, it is. It when Catherine arrives unexpectedly at Cal's apartment, a lot has changed in society, and she realizes that in a very powerful way when she arrives there.
What is the response when Catherine arrives without warning?
Well, Cal is shocked. I mean, he hasn't seen, you know, his late partner's mother for 20 years. And last time he saw her, they were at a memorial service for his late partner, Andre, and she just shows up 20 years later. And he thought, I'm never going to talk to this woman again. So his whole idea or what he remembers of her was she was just, she didn't really bother with them. She didn't really talk to Andre. Their interactions were very limited for the number of years that Andre and Cal were together in the late 80s, early 90s. And so he's just shocked. You know, it's that thing of when you don't see anybody for a while, you're just trying to be polite. And Cal, being the gentleman, you know, there's a line later in the play that Will, his now husband, will say, Cal's nice to everyone, even people who disapprove of him. And all Will has ever heard is what a monster she was. So he's like, how do I be nice to this monster? And why is she here? I mean, later on, he says, why are you here?
Of course, that's the $64,000 question. She may not even know the answer.
That's a big part of the play. As the play goes on, the audience comes to understand why she's really there. She says at the beginning of the play that she's actually on her way to Rome and she's stopping by. But as the play goes on, we see the real reasons.
And we assume then what you were describing, Seth, about how she was more than distant. She was perceived by them as angry and rejecting. That had to do with not accepting Andre's sexuality? Is that what it is, and his relationship with Cal?
I think so. I think because part of her was so mad at herself because she never accepted her son when he was alive, and she wasted all those years. And she now, I think part of why she comes, why in the beginning, is she wants to see what her son could have had he been given those years. She wants to see what her life would have been like with her son all these years later, you know, and being a part of a family. I mean, Andre was her only child, and they were close. You know, they would do things together when he wanted to get into acting and singing and dancing, because that's what he did. He was an actor. She drove him. As much as she says, you know, in the play that she had a hard time accepting him, you know, being gay or homosexual, as she calls it, or it sickens her, I think more than anything, the love of her son is what really mattered. And her anger is anger mostly at herself.
And there's a diary. Is that just a pretext for her to find a reason to show up at Cal and Will's? Or does it become more significant in some way?
It does become more significant. I think we don't want to give too much away about that, but there is a deeper significance there.
And what about the time of year? It's winter?
It's winter. It's actually in the beginning of the script, we're told that it's the shortest day of the year. It's the winter solstice.
And again, we ask, if a writer's a good writer, things like that are not incidental choices.
Correct.
So we'll feel something about that as well.
Yeah. I think, especially at the beginning of the play, there's a cold, wintry sense to even to the dialogue, without the audience even having to be told too much about the season.
You spoke with us when you were doing Extremities in a very passionate way about what it meant to you to have the opportunity to do that play. Do you feel in a similar way? Because you were almost saying that coming back and doing theater again was life-enhancing or life-changing in a way for you. Is this more of that exploration?
Yes. You know, dealing with like Extremities, you know, you dealt with sexual violence and abuse, and I had that early in life. Now that's given me the strength to do something like this. You know, I'm a gay man, and I struggled with it. You know, after I dealt with abuse, I dealt with trying to accept myself for being gay. And I blame myself when I would just be like, you know, if God could just make me normal or make me like my, like anybody else, so I could be straight. And I, you know, there were times when I thought it'd be better not to be here than to accept myself. So now I see opportunities, and I really owe that a lot to Diva, to kind of do these plays that not only just to be like, you know, hey, look at me, you know, I'm also hoping that, like I did with Extremities, that this can help somebody. You know, theater saved my life, and my aunt, my cousin saved my life. I'm hoping that people see this. And, you know, especially now in these times, we're not seeing enough positive representation. There's become so much of people putting other people in boxes and not looking at it, well, they're gay. No, they're not just gay, they're human. I always say this isn't a gay story, this is a human story. And it's one of the most, you know, universal messages that any play can have, is just about love, being loved, and receiving love.
And so in that sense, Will and Cal and their son, they have what we might think of as an ordinary, loving family.
Yeah, when Catherine arrives, she finds a very happy family there. And I think to have, as Seth said, to have that shown on stage, that is a possibility. I think too often we see representations of LGBTQ plus people either in a very tragic way or perhaps in a very silly kind of way. But this shows a group of happy people.
Is there an intermission, or do you do it all at once?
No, it is 90 minutes straight through. There's no intermission. We really felt that McNally did that for a reason. The story really moves through, and there's really not a spot to take a break. And I think it's all the more powerful because there's not an intermission.
Then as director, you have characters on stage who are interacting, and there's animosity, we feel the tension. Well, why are you here, as you were suggesting, Seth? So there are things to uncover, but it's not a door-slamming kind of piece. So how do you keep the rhythm flowing? It must be that McNally has written it well.
I think that's a big part of it. He's given us a very good script to start with. And in spite of some of the heavy themes and some of the arguing, he's balanced that with some humor. And I think more importantly, he's balanced it with hope. I think if there's anything that I hope the audience takes away with them, is a sense of hope for all the characters and for themselves as well.
I think also too, the thing that I discovered is human frailty. I think when Will first meets Catherine, he looks at her like a monster. But as the play goes on, he sees the human frailty, he sees her, and he kind of understands. And not only does he understands her better, but he also gets to understand Andre, his husband's former partner, who he's like, you know, in his shadow. But then he understands there was a human there and that he was just like him.
Is it one day then?
Yes.
It's just that one visit.
It takes place in real time. And they always say, Dolly Parton said in The Steel Magnolias, you know, laughter through tears. It's her favorite emotion. It's mine too.
There is a child involved as well, a son.
We don't see him a lot in the play, but he is a pivotal part of the story, especially as it goes on.
Again, there's that sense of generations. Cal is older than Will?
Correct. Yeah, Cal is 45, and Will is 15 years younger.
So there is already a generational gap, and then there's the young lad.
Right, so we really have four generations. We have Catherine's, we have Cal's, Will's, and then Bud's, the young boy.
It's interesting how every, you start with like Catherine's generation, right? She was born in the 40s, 50s. And then like, oh, you know, we don't talk about gay, it's bad. And then Cal was like more a little open. And then his and Andre's generation, they were the ones that the AIDS epidemic hit the hardest. That was their whole experience of trying to stay well. And then you have Will, who like, now we got the marriage going. And then you have the little boy, Bud, who now they talk about AIDS in school and it's more accepting. So it's very interesting to see that.
Well, tell us the details. How can we see it?
So we open on June 13th and we run through June 22nd. We're at the Old Brick Theater on West Market Street in Scranton, and they can call the theater and make a reservation.
I just wanted to mention that we are partnering with the Rainbow Alliance. They've been really great. So what we're doing at every performance, you know, if they want to, there'll be a jar there on the table where when you come in, we are collecting, you know, monetary donations for the Rainbow Alliance. They support the LGBTQ+ community through educational workshops, community resources, and public forums. Also, if you come to see the show at any performance, if you wear something representing Pride, you did get $1 off the ticket price. Also, on Sunday, June 15th, after our 2:00 performance, we will be doing a talk back with the cast and crew, and a member from Rainbow Alliance will be there, and it is a safe space. If anybody needs to talk, there will be people there to talk to.
And even working with the actors and some of the other people at Diva, everyone is really bringing something to the table and their own experience of this play and of a lot of the issues that it brings up. And I think it's just, it's adding to the richness of what McNally has given us.
Director David Hunnish and actor Seth Golden speaking about the play Mothers and Sons by Terrence McNally that will open at Diva Theater, and that's Friday. That's tomorrow, June 13th, 14th, 15th, and the following weekend, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Friday and Saturday performances at 7:30. Sunday matinees are at 2. The theater is the Old Brick, and it's located at 126 West Market Street in Scranton. Area code 570-209-7766. 209-7766. Area code 570. Mothers and Sons by Terrence McNally, to be presented by Diva Theater at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton, June 13th, 14th, 15th, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, Friday and Saturday performances at 7:30, Sunday matinees at 2:00.